I typically just talk with them about what their current strategies are. You know, what are their thoughts? And a lot of it just kind of goes to what do they have available in their area, or what's going to be the most cost effective option for them. You know, in some areas, you know, around Miles City here, you know, we have those alfalfa cake plants that we can, you know, get in some alfalfa range cubes or cake or however you want to say it, to provide them that extra nutrition out there in the winter. And I think they're a good protein and energy source for those cows. And but I also recommend, if you got hay, you know, never underestimate a good quality hay for those cows during nutrition, or those new high nutritional need times, late gestation, or, you know, just immediately post calving, because that's what, you know, is a good reliable source. We already have it in the lot, and you don't have to go buy anything extra either.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit ProEarthAnimalHealth.com today. Control the cortisol surge and control your drug costs on your inbound cattle. Make the 21-day SHOT Show a thing of the past with QFA 2000. Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Lallemand Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Mullenix, and today I have Dr. Megan Van Inman from Montana State. Megan is the beef cattle specialist located in Billings. Located in Miles City, Montana. And I should have known that since I lived in Miles City, Montana.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on today. Look forward to visiting with you.
So today we're going to talk about winter nutrition, cover some other strategies of something that a lot of production in the north does is water consumption and using snow for water consumption, which is you know, it freaks a lot of people out if they're not used to doing it. But it's something that happens a tremendous amount of time. And a lot of producers that do not have water in some of their pastures, that's their winter pastures. And so I'm sure we'll get into that. So for the audience, I know you've been on the show before, but for the audience, kind of give your background of what you do there at Montana State and how you got there.
Yeah. So, grew up in a, you know, small farm in Indiana, you know, bachelor's and master's at Purdue University, in ruminant nutrition, and then moved to North Dakota State, University at one of their research centers out in Henninger. Actually going to head there this weekend, to visit some friends. Focused still on ruminant nutrition, then postdoc at Iowa State, focusing more on the mineral nutrition and feedlot side of things. And now I'm here in Miles City, at our USDA station here, Fort Keogh, kind of just focus on general beef cattle management and primarily nutrition. I rely a lot on my other reproductive physiologist friends to answer those questions, but, you know, focus more on, you know, winter nutrition, beef cattle supplements, things like that.
Yeah, as you know, Montana State has two extension specialists, and so that's the generalist that you have to be in those situations, right? Is that you're expected to know everything about the beef cow, and you know your background is heavy nutrition, and you still get a tremendous amount of reproduction questions.
Yep. At the end of the day, though, I mean, you got to feed a cow to breed a cow. So that's kind of what I focus on. But, you know, do my best there to answer any reproductive related questions. And a lot of times it does kind of all boil down to nutritional impacts, too. So,
yeah. So let's jump in some winter nutrition since, you know, we're moving into winter in a lot of, you know, the Western United States and you know, getting snow here soon for a lot of country. You know, forage is dormant for a lot of our systems already, so they're already grazing low quality forages. And so let's just get into winter nutrition and supplementation strategies and so forth.
Yeah, no, that's the hard part is, well, right now it's sunny out, you know, here in Miles City, and supposed to be 50 degrees, at least through the weekend. So, I mean, we're not, knock on wood, we're not feeling the effects of winter yet, but it's, I always like to be prepared before we get to those months, you know, because as you know, in January, February here, you know, in a lot of the Western U.S., it's going to be 20, 30 below zero, and, you know, and then we're fighting wind and snow and, you know, frozen waters and things like that. So, you know, it's always good to be prepared before we get to those months. And you're, I don't know about anybody else, but I don't like being out in 30 below weather and everything, you know, all day, but we do what we have to do.
Yeah. So a little quick story is when I moved to Miles City, I moved on January 4th from Las Cruces, New Mexico. And so it went from, you know, 70 degrees winter days to negative 30 and yeah. 18-hour drive, right? And so that's a big change. But from a beef production standpoint, is we have to be prepared for those. And so, you know, you can consider you being in a banana belt or whatever you want to call Miles City. And you do get some, you know, some warm parts of the winter, but you have to be prepared for those cold stress time points and have a contingency plan with your supplementation plan, right?
Yeah, that's the hard part, because as you're well aware, you know, we can go from 30 above, you know, one day, and then 3 days later, we're you know, dropping 60 degrees and, you know, the wind's blowing and everything. And I think that's something we all need to think about, too, is not necessarily just the temperature, but we get a lot of wind out here. So how is that affecting those nutrient requirements, but also, you know, what do we need to feed for supplementation and everything? And it was interesting. So I just got back from a trip from Chile in the very southern tip. So it was, you know, consistent 30 mile an hour wind. I thought I was used to wind, and they're like, oh no, this is a very calm day for us, you know? And we talk about, you know, a lot, you know, reducing input costs, lowering those supplementations, trying to get by with very little supplementation if we possibly can. And it was very interesting down there because they have no supplementation plan. They, whatever that grass provides is what those cows consume. And honestly, I was very surprised, because we're used to low input is still supplying something. And so it's kind of made me rethink some different supplementation strategies here and everything. Not saying we don't need it, but it's definitely also impacting their reproduction as well, and maintaining that pregnancy to calving too. A lot of the producers I spoke with down there, you know, two AI cycles, and they were getting 35% success rate on each cycle. And then they throw in some cleanup bulls and they're still topping out at 80%. So kind of, you know, you give a little bit more perspective on why supplementation is important, because we're providing those nutrients to help those cows be successful in, you know, and their entire job is to produce that calf.
Yeah. And those systems take a really low growth, low maintenance requirement cows to fit those systems. But, and that's definitely not what we have in a lot of our production systems in the United States, that, you know, we do have those high, you know, nutrient requirements during late gestation of feeding the cow and the calf in utero, and then making sure that, you know, rebreed is important. And so, you know, from your extension position and working with producers in Montana, how do you work with those producers in developing that winter supplementation plan?
You know, first, I typically just talk with them about what their current strategies are, you know, what are their thoughts. And a lot of it just kind of goes to what do they have available in their area, or what's going to be the most cost effective option for them. You know, in some areas, you know, around Miles City here, you know, we have those alfalfa cake plants that we can, you know, get in some alfalfa range cubes or cake or however you want to say it, to provide them that extra nutrition out there in the winter. And I think they're a good protein and energy source for those cows. And but I also recommend, if you got hay, you know, never underestimate a good quality hay for those cows during nutrition, or those new high nutritional need times, late gestation, or, you know, just immediately post calving, because that's what, you know, is a good reliable source. We already have it in the lot and you don't have to go buy anything extra either.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different avenues of providing that. And, you know, alfalfa is a great source. Whether or not it's a cube, it's a cake, you know, even as a hay source, of feeding it once a week as a protein source is a great way of delivering protein for the week, and also helps with some, maybe some shortage in forages that you decrease in grazing pressure on that day that you feed. So there's a lot of options there, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just knowing what you have available and yeah, just the, what's going to be the easiest and cheapest for you to get in there. Cause I mean, as we all know, labor costs are up and, you know, and a lot of things like that. And, gas prices aren't horrible, but they're, you know, they're not the best either. So, you know, what can we get out there that's also convenient, that's going to keep our costs down? And you know, we don't like to think of anything like that right now while calf prices and cow prices are as good as they are. But at the end of the day, we still need it to be a profitable endeavor when we're providing those supplements.
Yeah, the challenge, and I think you kind of touched on it, is what is available to them. And, you know, that sometimes is a massive challenge for a lot of these producers, is that availability of different feedstuffs can be very limited. And so we have to be creative of can we get and how can we feed it?
Yeah. And that's, you know, here in Eastern Montana, you might have to travel 100 miles to, you know, to your local feed store or elevator or, anything like that, or your feed, even just your feed rep, you know, having to make that travel commitment. And in the winter time, you know, is not the most fun time to travel here in Montana, especially once, you know, we start getting snow and everything. So, it's making those decisions, I think, in a timely manner. You know, can I buy something early on before the weather really sets in and have it available when needed, versus, you know, trying to make a decision the day before the blizzard or something like that to get into town to pick something up.
So do you normally work with your producers to start looking at in September, October, of trying to contract feeds? So, you know, by the time you get to November, December, you know, prices sometimes, you know, start picking up because the demand is higher, because, you know, winter weather, et cetera, especially with the alfalfa, the hays, that, et cetera.
Yeah, I try to, you know, have them think about it as early as possible. I mean, because they know by, you know, August, September, what they gotta, if they're haying, you know, what do they have sitting in their stack yards, and then getting that quality analysis done at a lab. And, you know, then we can start making a plan. Okay, do I need to buy something else? Or, you know, maybe I have really high quality alfalfa, but can I purchase some sort of straw to help feed with it to prolong that source? Because, you know, as we know as nutritionists, you know, beef cattle don't require the dairy quality 20, 25% protein hay, alfalfa hay. You know, we can get by with 10, 11% protein grass alfalfa mix, or even just a nice quality grass hay, and still meet every requirement in the book for, you know, energy and protein wise. So, you know, what do we got sitting there versus, you know, do we need to buy something, or can I go buy something cheap that to feed it with?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, it doesn't have to be highest quality, right? And so we don't need to overfeed the requirements. We don't need a bunch of early fat cows going through winter that spotted conditions are 7, 8, that, you know, we're just wasting nutrients, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing, is I, you know, I also talk to producers a lot about having a body condition score on your cows. You know, we don't need those 7s and 8s out there, because they're just costing us extra money to maintain that body condition. Now, do they need to drop 300 pounds in 90 days before calving? No, it's probably not the most useful of that, but just being cognizant of keeping them in good condition. Those 5, 6, you know, body condition cows are still going to be in great condition to get us to calving, because, you know, overly fleshy cows, they can also have issues at calving time, just from a completely other end of the spectrum, versus not having enough energy with the fat, but having too much fat and you're trying to pull that calf out of there because she just can't get it out of a reproductive tract because she's too fat.
So what's your recommendation to producers and you know, trying to maintain body condition score, not getting too fat. How do you work with producers in that?
So usually what I recommend, we always like to get our hands on cows, to get that, but really get a feel for that body condition. And, that's just not possible in a lot of our management systems. They're working them 2-3 times a year, maybe. So, visual appraisal is probably our best bet. And so usually what I recommend is, body condition score 5, you're going to see the last two ribs pretty much. Even with all their hair coat, you should still see the outline of those ribs. Little bit of backbone, but not too much, but they just look like good cows, I guess. So, as you're going to go roll a bale out, you're going to feed some cake or what have you, bring a pad of paper with you and a pen, roll out your bale, let them walk in, and then kind of as you drive back by them every 5 or 10 head, just write down a body condition score for them, and then average that out, and if it's a 5 to a 6, you go, okay, my nutrition's probably meeting the needs of those cows, and then wait a couple of weeks and do it again, give them a chance to fluctuate that score, positive or negative. It takes a while to add or decline 125 pounds to change a body condition score, and then do it again another day. And doesn't have to be the same cows or anything, but if your average stays the same and it's a good body condition score, you're probably doing pretty good on the nutrition plane. If it starts to decline a little bit, you go, okay, need to make some adjustments there, add a little bit extra energy or some extra protein in there to help them gain some weight back. And if it goes up, that might not necessarily be a bad thing either. You would just, like we said, we don't want them to be those 7s and 8s, but getting them up to an average of 6 and maintaining that, I think, is pretty key.
So how many head does a producer need to do is, you've got a group of, let's say, 500 that you're feeding. How many head on average should he be doing when he does that?
So that's the hard part. You get into groups of 500, it's a lot harder to write down every 5 or 10 head, but I'd still, at least 10, 20% of the herd, which is still every, 10 head or so, just write a score down so you get a good average. And make sure, I always say, make sure just randomly select a cow. Don't look for the best ones. Don't look for those little ones, the dinks or anything, or the ones that are not quite as fleshy. Just randomly select and do the best you can. Now, if you're going to work your cows for, preg check or anything like that, because I know some producers haven't preg checked yet because they're later calving in the spring, that's a really good time to really get your hands on those cows. And a lot of times your vet that's doing the preg check will give you a body condition score for every cow if you want it. Or I always like to throw our extension agents kind of in the mix and just say, have your extension agent come out and work with you those days. So also, if you're not comfortable, especially making that call on body condition score, plus it's also an independent eye on those cows. Cause I know we all like to look at our cows and not judge them as critically or as we might somebody else's cows. So having that independent eye, like your vet or your extension agent come out and help, can be key.
And you briefly touched on it, but the other part is not looking at the extreme ends, the fat cows or the thin cows, right? Because that's where our eye tends to go. As your eye starts going to the extreme and, man, we've got some thin cows over here, or these cows are over here are fat. And so that kind of throws us off of what the true average is, because within the average, you will have fatter cows or you're going to have thinner cows.
Yeah. And that's the difficult part, right? Because like you said, that's where our eyes are drawn. And one thing I always let producers know, it's like every herd has the body condition score 7s and 8s, just like every herd has the body condition scores 3s and 4s. They're not bad cows. They give you a good calf every year. They're able to produce without any sort of extra nutrition that you're trying to boost those thin cows up with. But she never changes. She's always a condition score 3 or 4, but she gives you that good calf. Keep her around. That's a good producing cow right there. No reason to kick her out just because she might be a little bit thinner than the rest.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so let's move over to managing with snow. And so snow can be, a challenge for a lot of producers, especially they're not used to manage with snow. But, in countries that you've, in Montana, you get a lot of snow. You also get Chinooks that will will come through and you'll wipe out all your snow for a little bit. So how do you manage around, you know, snow and grazing and winter management with snow?
Yeah, that's the difficult one, like you said. Just because we can have a lot of snow, but there's been areas in north central Montana that haven't seen snow in 6 years now, because we rely on that snow to provide our pasture growth in the early spring, you know, before we get any sort of rain and things to help us get into summer months. So it can be an extreme challenge in that regard. But also in those areas, I would say more in western Montana, where we might get a little bit more moisture containing snow versus eastern Montana, where we do get that melt off. But the hard part is it can provide some water for those cows, but it also, once it free freezes, it provides that really hard crust. And so they really got to break down into it to start grazing again, or even just a little bit to supplement if you're providing some hay or something like that. They're still going to go out and graze or try to, even if you're full feeding that hay, just because that's what a cow does, right? She just goes out and, you know, she's trying to stay full and stay warm. So I think it's more just management. And I know a lot of our producers here, by, you know, January 1, we try to push it as late as possible before we start feeding hay. But, you know, I know guys right now that are feeding hay because they're running out of pasture availability, just in general without snow. So managing that snow source, right, I wish we could, just because of Mother Nature, but it can be a challenge because you want them to stay there grazing, but also recognizing that you're probably going to have to start helping them a little bit out there as we get that hard crust on that snow.
Yeah, the crust part is the challenge, right? And cows have the ability to push snow and graze with snow. It's when you have that crust that builds up. And after, you know, sunny days and then you have a freeze on top of it, you build that really hard crust layer of snow where, you know, you can start seeing cows' nose are a little bloody, scratched up, you know, maybe their low legs are start, you know. And then, so, you know, at that point, you need to start feeding hay because they can't push that snow.
Yep. Yeah. And that's, you know, I guess on one sense, we haven't had to worry too much about that, at least here in the eastern side of the state, you know, so it's been pretty open the last few winters. So they've been able to been out there grazing while still supplementing with some hay. But also at the same time, you know, we've kind of lacked that moisture source to kind of stimulate that growth come springtime as everything starts to melt and thaw. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those double-edged swords. It's good and it's bad all in the same time frame.
So you kind of touched on us and you said snow as a water source. Mm-hmm. So for the audience, what do you mean by saying snow is a water source?
So, I mean, cows can consume snow as a water source if needed. I typically don't recommend making them drink or eat snow to get water, because at least, you know, in a lot of areas like out here, there's not a lot of moisture in that snow. So they're having to consume a lot of snow just to get a little bit of water out of it. So having a water source available, creek, you know, river, whatever you've got, a reservoir, is really key. And that's also to make sure that they're keeping up on their feed intake as well, because water drives feed intake. So if they're not able to consume the amount of water they need, they're not going to eat what they need. And then, you know, things can go downhill real quick. Now, we get into these really cold days where, you know, maybe they aren't traveling very far and they can, you know, do a little bit of water, you know, from the snow on those days if it's available, because we don't want them to walk very far at that point when it's 30 below out, because we need them to conserve that energy. So it's one of those I think it's a good source, but I wouldn't solely rely on that as a water source.
And you know, a lot of places, Canada, they do rely on that, but that's a much wetter snow. And so that's a very common practice some places. But even in Montana, we've seen that, you know, cows would come into water every day. But once snow hit, they would come into water maybe every 3 days, 4 days with some, because they are supplementing that water with snow intake. And so they will do that quite a bit. So their grazing behavior changes when snow occurs. And some of it is that they're not coming into water as much because of that.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the nice things about snow. And one of the nice things about cows, they adapt pretty well to their environment, you know, if they're given the opportunity. And, you know, like, you know, like here at Fort Keogh, you know, we watched cows consume more water if it even had just a little bit of a warmer temperature to it versus that ice cold water. And I honestly, I can't blame them. I don't want to drink ice cold water, you know, when it's 30 below out either. So, you know, it doesn't have, you just having that heater to source in there to keep the, honestly, just keep the water from freezing is probably enough to stimulate that intake.
Yeah. And there's a component to ruminal shock of shocking microbes with cold, you know, extremely cold water. And we've done some of those studies of looking at, we did on Mile City, looking at, you know, cows eating, you know, warm water, consuming warm water versus cold water and what it did to the rumen microbes and fiber digestion. And you can have some decreased fiber digestion from it, but definitely see a water intake increase with warmer water.
Mm-hmm.
Because one part of that, I think, is it keeps the body warm, right? As well. So that's one component that helps with keeping the cow warm during those really cold, negative 20, 30 degree days.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's, I think more important is just maintaining that rumen fermentation to keep that body temperature up on those days than it is to really worry about, nutrient requirements for those. Hopefully it's, you know, it's a few days and we get a little bit warmer temperatures out. And I guess one of the nicer things typically for us here in Eastern Montana, if it's that cold out, it means it's a nice, crisp, clear, you know, it's sunny and they're able to sun themselves a little bit and kind of help with that body temperature as well. So, because that's, I get a lot of questions about that, like during, you know, those 30 below days or blizzards or something like that, where we're really fighting body temperature issues. And yeah, and I always just, you know, that's the, those are the days I usually recommend feed your low quality hay, you know, let that sit in the rumen and keep them nice and warm versus feeding like a really high quality hay. Because physically we may not be able to meet all of her requirements if we use kind of that old rule of thumb of, you know, for every degree below 32 degrees Fahrenheit, we increase her energy requirements by 1%. You know, if you're, we're talking 60 degrees below that, I mean, we physically can't feed her enough at that point. So, you know, give her a low quality hay, straw, you know, just something to sit in that rumen and just kind of keep her going for hopefully those few days. And then we can worry again about getting some requirements met after that.
Yeah. The challenge is those long periods of that, you know, short periods we can deal with low quality. It's long periods that we have to worry about of making sure they can consume enough daily versus, you know, just stuffing them full of low quality.
Yeah. For those, yeah, the long periods of time, that's what makes everybody depressed.
Yeah. So Megan, to wrap us up, do you got anything you want to touch on?
I don't think so. Those were kind of my most common questions, I guess, from most producers that I discuss with, is just all about, you know, everybody, you know, I wish we had a magic feed that, you know, we could tell everybody to provide that would, you know, magically meet everything. And I always think like one of these days, maybe I'll invent that and, you know, make my millions of dollars. But at the end of the day, not everybody's management system works for anybody else. So find something that works for you and a supplement that works and stick with it.
It's time for our famous three.
Is stress affecting your bottom line? Even routine handling, inclement weather, weaning, and dietary changes can significantly lower the rumen pH, causing cortisol levels to spike. Cortisol not only compromises the immune system, but also suppresses normal appetite and feed consumption. The solution? Cattle Active. Increase production and reduce the impacts of stress on your cattle for cents a day. Cattle Active restores the balance naturally. Want to learn more how a feeding program, including Cattle Active, can improve both profits and herd health? Visit us today at proearthanimalhealth.com. Be proactive with Cattle Active.
Sounds good. Well, I've got three questions here and we'll wrap up. The first one is, you know, what is your go-to highly recommended beef resource? Could be a website, could be a book. What do you recommend people utilizing?
Well, I guess non-book wise, I started thinking about this as like, don't be afraid to call your local extension agent or your extension specialist, you know, use them as your resource because they're there to help you. But as a book, I tend to really rely on, it's the Beef Cattle Handbook out of Oklahoma State. I know everybody's going to be like, well, that's Oklahoma, right? They're totally different. But at the end of the day, requirements are requirements. And so I use those as a guideline. And I think it's a very good producer resource as well, because everything's in pounds. It's not on, you know, our, kilogram units or anything. Everything's pounds per day. And so that's what I usually go with if I have a recommendation.
No, those are great resources. So the second question is, what is a non-ag book you highly recommend someone reading?
One of the ones, it's been a few years since I read it. It's called Extreme Ownership. It's kind of one of those, you know, I've never been much of a nonfiction reader, but I really enjoyed that book. And it was just all about accepting your roles and responsibilities and being willing to, you know, accept if there was some bad consequences or something happened and everything, right? None of us want to recommend anything that doesn't work, but at the end of the day, sometimes it happens and you kind of have to accept that responsibility.
Yep. No, that's a great book. So lastly, what sets apart a successful beef professional from someone that isn't?
Yeah, that was the deep question you kind of had me think about earlier. I think the big thing that I've found is listening, I guess, is actively listening to producers, as well as other professionals, and being willing to kind of learn from them as well. Because obviously, like, if your ranch has been around for 100, 200 years, something's going right. Right. And I want to learn from those producers and what they're doing. And maybe it's something I can take with me. And if somebody has a similar issue, I can make that recommendation and just say, you know, I learned this from a rancher that's been around and he's seen this problem before. And here's what they did to help counteract it. So I think listening is the big thing, and acknowledging that, you know, we went to school. That's great. But, you know, boots on the ground knowledge is also very valuable.
It is. It is. We learn so much when we truly listen. And so from an extension standpoint, that's very important, because they don't always ask you the question they want to ask you. If you listen, you'll figure out the true question that they're trying to ask you. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again, Megan. Really great stuff. Really a big need as you think about winter nutrition and managing cows during some of these stressful time points of late gestation. We got winter weather. How do we feed them? How do we manage around snow, etc.?
All right. Thanks, Travis, for having me on today. This was great.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.